Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopijana Bhalava Giribara Dhari. Gopijana Bhalava Giribara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jayam Vishnupad, Paramahansa Paribraja Gacharya, Ashtotarashata Shishimad, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Jayam Vishnupad, Paramahansa Paribraja Gacharya, Ashtotarashata Shishimad, His Divine Grace, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki, Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki, ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki, Grantara Shimam Bhagavatam ki, Nitai Gaura Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shishi Guru and Shigoranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, entitled the Summon Bonum, Chapter 5, entitled The Meeting of Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev, text number 8. Maharaha Vastrabharana Kanchukoshni Shabushita Gopasama Jaju Rajam Nanopajanapanaja Maharaha Vastrabharana Kanchukoshni Shabushita Gopasama Jaju Rajan Nanopajanapanaja Maharaha Vastrabharana Kanchukoshni Shabushita Gopasama Jaju Rajan Nanopajanapanaja. Please chant. Maharaha Vastrabharana. Maha-arha, extremely valuable, vastra-abharana, with garments and ornaments, kanchuka, by a particular type of garments used in Vrindavan, ushnisha, with turbans, bhushita, being nicely dressed, gopaha, all the cowherd men, samajaju, came there, Rajan, O King Maharaj Parikshit, Nana, various Upajana presentations, Panayaha, holding in their hands, translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. O King Parikshit, the cowherd men dressed very opulently with valuable ornaments and garments, such as coats and turbans, decorated in this way and carrying various presentations in their hands, they approached the house of Nanda Maharaj. Purport. When we consider the past condition of the agriculturalist in the village, we can see how opulent he was, simply because of agricultural produce and protection of cows. At the present, however, agriculture having been neglected and cow protection given up, the agriculturalist is suffering pitiably and is dressed in a niggardly torn clothes. This is the distinction between the India of history and the India of the present day. By the atrocious activities of Ugra Karma, how we are killing the opportunity of human civilization. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimate Romopada Swami Dinamine. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nitinamine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyabadi Pashatyade Satarine. Vancha kalpa taruvyasha kripa sindhu vyayavacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. So the narration of the amazing wealth that the inhabitants of Vrindavan had is being highlighted by Srila Prabhupada in his purport. And also in the narration of Srila Sukadev Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit. Vrindavan was a village that its economy was based on agriculture and cow protection, especially cow protection. The protection of the cows. It was a Vaishya community. And not only Maharaj Nanda, who was the king of the village of the land of Vrindavan, but Braja Bhumi, the land of Vrindavan, was a big tract of land. And there were several other kings that were answerable to Maharaj Nanda. Nanda Maharaj was the king of the whole Braj, but there was also Brishavanu, King Brishavanu, and there were others, you know, important cowherd men who were who have control over the land there. But it was an agricultural community, extremely wealthy. Nanda Maharaj has explained that he has 900,000 cows. 900,000 cows, that when you imagine 900,000 cows, the amount of space that 900,000 cows would take. I mean, just imagine, you know, like when they have those concerts, you know, like Woodstock or something like that, they have 50,000 people, you know, there in a huge amount of land. I mean, and these are human bodies that we have, you know, like, imagine a, you know, a big cow, but not, you know, 50,000, no, times whatever, you know, to 900,000 is double 900, you know, it's a huge amount to feed them. And that was just Nanda Maharaj, the king, and so the others. It is described that not only Nanda Maharaj and the wealthy landholders were extremely opulent, but also all the villagers, all the people, the cowherd men, the fact that is described here that they're dressed so opulently, you know, with silk and jewelry, and the jewelry was not just, you know, pretty things, but it was gold, silver, and jewels like emeralds and all these type of things. Opulent, very opulent. And that's just your regular, you know, village people. You know, they dress for the occasion and they bring gifts. A village. What to speak of the great cities like, you know, Mathura and Hastinapuri and like that. The big capitals, you know, of the, to the, what to speak of Hastinapuri, who was the capital of the world at that time. So just the village, the opulence of the village. And it is explained that the wealth was so incredible that when there was a festivity like this, they will decorate the cows. And they will decorate the cows with gold, with pearls, and with silk. So they make nice clothing for the cows. And they put, you know, their horns will be covered with gold. They have, you know, like gold things and the hooves. And they put pearls and, you know, very beautifully decorated. And the cows will be very happy. So this is an example of a thriving Vedic economy. Something that for us is just, you know, like we marvel or just imagining what it would be like, something like that. Something that we only see, you know, sometimes in those how you call that type of movies? Not the you know, those movies of that depict, you know, some futuristic or some past culture or something like that. That, you know, science fiction or you know, like the Antarctica, you know, something like that. The city of gold and things like that. You know, this type of things we can only imagine. Yeah, something. Yeah. You got the idea. So, we can only imagine. But it's described in the scriptures that this is a type of civilization that was generated from following the perfect system that is described in the Vedas. Krishna says that, he gives a hint of that in the Bhagavad Gita. He says that by following his system, then everything that is required to live happily will be provided. To live comfortably, happy, prosperous will be provided. And not only that, But it's such a perfect system that Krishna creates that not only one can live comfortably and with the four principles of Dharma sort of manifesting naturally and organically without much struggle. It will be automatically manifested. The four principles of Dharma are Dharma, religiosity, economic development, artha, kama, sense gratification, and moksha, liberation from this material world. So these things will happen just very organically. It's designed to flourish. So by the following religious principles, then naturally there will be a system that provides both for artha and kama. And what is these religious principles that are established? Krishna explains with one code word that we have to understand is yajna, sacrifice. So there is a particular prescribed yajna for people. And there's a particular prescribed yajna that according to the times is suitable for human society. And one have to understand and learn the process of yajna to actually being able to live in harmony with this perfect system. So what is the essence of the understanding of yajna? Because then people can concoct some idea of what yajna is, which is what we see happens in Kali Yuga. In one sense, that how Krishna has to come to trick the people of Kali Yuga who were taking this process of yajna and concocted a whole complete horrendous thing that it was based on abuse and exploitation. So Krishna has to descend as Lord Buddha to stop that and to trick this class of men who were using these sacrifices for their personal interests, not for the process of yajna or for the essence of the process of yajna. So the Sri Isha Upanishad give us basically the essence of where it lies, the understanding of this process of yajna. The first thing that we have to understand is what Srila Prabhupada calls the Ishavasya principle. Ishavasya principle. Who is God? And understand God as the supreme proprietor. Ishavasyam idam sarvam. That everything is control and everything is the property. Yat kincha jagatam jagat. This whole world, jagat, it belongs to this supreme controller. It's his property. So when we see that everything belongs to God, to Krishna, then that paradigm allows the proper understanding application of this perfect system. So first, God is the proprietor and everything is for his satisfaction. The process of yajna is only connected to the satisfaction of God. Krishna explains that also in the Bhagavad Gita, in the third chapter, famous verse. Give me a second here. can remember the Sanskrit. Jagyartha karmanonyatra. Jagyartha karmanonyatra. That all sacrifices must be done for the satisfaction of Jagya Artha, the enjoyer of Jagya, as a name of Lord Vishnu, Jagyapati, or Jagya Artha, is a name of Lord Vishnu. So this sacrifice must be done for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. No sacrifice, Vedic sacrifice, is part of the system. It's for Lord Vishnu. It's not for the demigod. Even when you do a jagya for a demigod, it's offered to Lord Vishnu. You know, the results, when it's properly done, the concoctions is a different thing. So the understanding of who is the Isha or the controller, and everything belongs to him, and everything must be done for his satisfaction. Bhaktaram jagya tapasha. And the other part to understand is this principle of tena tyaktena bunchita. This word bunchita, tyaktena, means that is, there's a quota for each one of us. Bunchita is that we should accept gracefully our quota. So everything is perfectly placed, and each one of us has a particular quota that is being given to us, afforded to us by Krishna, that is perfect. Is perfect for us. And that's part of the understanding, that if it's more than my quota, it will mess me up. And if it's less than my quota, it will mess me up. It's just perfect. It's perfectly tailored. And people in Vedic times, they were perfectly satisfied with the quota. And they will flourish like that. Everything they required to be happy and satisfied was there. So it was a very it's naturally a harmonious society. It's a society that is based on following these principles, the Ishavasya principles. So the dealings between people were, You see the divine behind everything, the divine arrangement between, you know, behind everything. So when the dealings were there, the thing in front is like following the principles of religion, and the dealings, they were done with the understanding that this is for the satisfaction of the divine. So it was all perfectly controlled by dharma, by religion. With that understanding, where did it go wrong? How it can go wrong? Because now we don't see that. What happened? The first thing that happened in Kali Yuga is that those who teach and who secure and who protect this knowledge that allows to function in Vedic culture, they became corrupted, the Brahmanas. That's the first thing that happens in Kali Yuga. If the fallen, the fall of the Brahminical culture started with Sringi, the son of Shaunika Rishi, who cursed Maharaj Parikshit, the great emperor who had Kali Yuga at bay. And with the mistake that Sringi, out of pride, you know, performed, that started the falling down of the Brahminical culture. Is when the body, the social body, it is explained that the Brahmanas are the head, the Kshatriyas are the arm, the Vaishyas are the stomach, and the Sudras are the legs. So that makes the body. And it's explained that although the head is more important than the legs, without legs, then you have a body that is very limited. So you really, you know, you don't want to lose a leg. You know, we actually value very much our legs. You may just for sure you don't want to lose. If you lose your head, if you lose your legs, you can still leave. But if you lose your head, you're finished. You can, so, but nevertheless, for a healthy body, we value every single part of it. They have a very important function. So, similarly, in the Vanashram institution, then this system of classes were respected and they were valued. But when the head goes, when you lose your head, either you go crazy, you know, you lose your capacity to properly guide, then the whole thing is finished. So that started the decline of society. So without the protection of those who teaches transcendental knowledge to society, who guides society in transcendental knowledge, in the knowledge of the Vedas, transcendental knowledge is required for us to be able to follow the Vedic culture. That's why Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna introduced in the third chapter this process of Jagya to Arjuna, next chapter is Divya Gyan, transcendental knowledge. Because without transcendental knowledge, it doesn't gel. One has to have the proper conception. Who's God? Who I am? And what is my relationship with God? So, without those who teach transcendental knowledge, then society goes astray. So then it became the misconception. So what is this misconception? Because we still have the classes. We still have a mercantile society. We still have kshatriyas. We still have intellectuals. We still have workers. So how is that right now? There is the distribution of wealth is so bad. It is explained that the 1% against the 99%. The 1% possesses wealth like what we read here that the 100% had. And 99% no wealth. It's just a fake wealth, paper, we heard about it, paper that is supposed to represent something valuable like gold and silver. It represents, but you know, it gets manipulated. There are some people that control the value of currency. So we see that, you know, day by day, you know, people are observing the value of this paper currency. And what happened with paper currency when there is a big conflict in the land like a war, then poof, becomes nothing. When there's a war, when there's a big depression, things change, then people lose everything, because it really is fake. It's not wealth, it's just paper. It represents, it's supposed to represent something valuable, but it's, where's your gold? We just have paper. So, where the change happens is that people starts to, with lack of transcendental knowledge, then they're basically at the mercy of this ignorance of bodily conception of life. In the bodily conception of life, then it's about me. The principle that rules is not God in the center, but it's me and the center. So it becomes a society of competition. Of competition of whoever has the most wit and capacity to cheat others. So it's a society that is run by self-interest. And the self-interest from the perspective of selfish. So it becomes a society of exploitation. So then we see how as time progresses, this natural system of economics and wealth has been degraded to something so artificial that is right now, that is really, when we see, is just like this 1%, 99%, which is really, it doesn't make sense. Previously, you have that wealth was based on the gift that nature provides. Land, grains, silk, minerals, gold, silver, milk, produce. This was wealth. And then when you have the exploitative mentality, then it degraded that, okay, then it became, you know, the system that was previously in the world was feudalism, right? So it was the division according to the kings, and those who were connected to the kings, like the lords and the military people, according to their service to the king, they would divide the land, and they were the peasants who would work the land. But the peasants were being exploited. So then those who were agriculturists, as Prabhupada said, basically, immediately when we think about farmers, we think about very simple people, sort of like, you know, not extremely educated, and, you know, simple people, peasants, you know, it's called farmers, you know. So you don't think of opulence, you think of simplicity, you know. The picture that we have of farming, of working the land, is hard work and not a lot of wealth. The wealth was of the landowners, the landholders, like that, the feudals, the lords, the kings, like that. And in Europe, several things came as a reaction of a system that was so exploitative and so neglectful of the people, that not only the majority of those peasants were highly neglected, that in terms of their poverty, but also they were afflicted by this, you know, the black plague, or the black death, they call it at that time, which was the bubonic plague, right? That basically devastated Europe. But they also had, you know, the conflicts with the church, religion, and, you know, the crusades, all the things, they came together so that people at one point, they couldn't take it. The majority of the people, that's when they took down the royalty in Europe. You know, they decapitated this one, knocked down that one, and then eventually the Industrial Revolution came. And the Industrial Revolution changed the whole sort of shape of the world. Now it moved from an agricultural economy to machine economies, to all kinds of things that were depending on machines. And that's basically the end result now that we're living, is that basically that not only the quality of life for people has been, you know, has been destroyed over and over and over. Further and further. So it's a very striking comparison. So we hear that Prabhupada's mission is to reestablish that system of an ashram, to be able to show the alternative of how to live happily and prosperous in a society that can be following, that follows this Ishavasya principle. We may not see it manifested in a lifetime, but it's coming. It's already predicted. You know, it's predicted that we're just at the beginning of the 10,000 years of this glorious time within Kali Yuga that happens only once in the day of Brahma, this window. So it's going to happen, golden age within this dark age. As far as we're concerned, individually and as a community, we have to embrace and have faith. We actually just embrace this Ishavasya principle. We have to learn it. We have to receive transcendental knowledge to be able to function properly with it. Because in reality, it's just being satisfied with what Krishna provides for us. And Krishna will provide. And by that satisfaction, how is that satisfaction possible? When you actually, your happiness and your functioning is grounded in a spiritual reality, in the spiritual, in the inner self, the inner satisfaction. As long as we remain externally affected, then we're vulnerable. We're vulnerable to all kinds of miserable conditions that are created by just Kali Yuga. So we have no alternative. The Upanishad says that. This is how the translation calls of the Upanishad. The mantra one says, everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. One may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way, for that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. There is no alternative to this way for man. So sometimes we're looking for alternative, but the Upanishad says there's no alternative. What does that mean? It's so like, you know, orthodox. No alternative. But basically, it's just how the thing is designed. You want to be happy, you want to be prosperous, and in a way that is progressive in consciousness, then follow the system of the Creator. It's like trying to operate a Apple computer without following things, you know, how the Steve Jobs guy made it. You know, I want to use it, but I want to use it as a Windows computer, you know. So I'd be frustrated because it doesn't work like that. Anyway, some example like that. We have to follow the instructions of the Creator. There's no alternative to actually happily use or function within this creation like that. And that's the point. If we do that, then we can find, you know, the satisfaction and the happiness. We will not be hankering too much for artificial things that we think will make us happy. Because over and over we find ourselves with this stark reality that these things is not making me happy. But we get tricked again and again. Just wait, keep going, it will happen. And so we're chasing, you know, this hanging carrot. It's almost there, so, you know, it's an intelligence that is compromised. So we can aspire for a prosperous life within this quota that Krishna has provided for us. Prosperous means happy. Prosperous means that we get the things that we need to maintain our life healthy, both mentally and physically. That's prosperity. Any comments or questions?
Back to Daniel.
Just to really quickly add on to what you were saying and reinforce the verses that you mentioned from the Upanishad about how sacrifice or yajna to Vishnu is the way to a prosperous and happy society. Prabhupada would always say, or one of the favorite things that he would say is how if you feed the stomach, then automatically every part of the body, the feet, the hands, everything is going to be satisfied. Or how if you water instead of watering like the leaves and the flowers and the fruits of a tree, if you just water the roots of the tree, then automatically everything is going to be satisfied and everything is going to flourish. Or in Bhagavatam one of my favorite verses from Bhagavatam 1.2.13, where it says, "O best among the twice born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging the duties prescribed from one's own occupation according to castes and divisions and orders of life is to please the personality of Godhead."
Right.
So there's something to add on to that.
Haridoshanam.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite something, you know. I mean, we we get to hear these things, and we have to come to the point of embracing it. But really, it's all about transcendental, the importance of transcendental knowledge, cultivating it, because, you know, we have to expose ourselves to this to be able to develop the understanding. But it's not just faith. It's common sense. You can start to see, wow, this makes sense. It makes sense. It's a perfect universe. There's a structure. So there's laws. So how can you live peacefully if you don't know the laws? You don't know how the things that you're supposed to do. So, you know, it's just common sense. And then, okay, let me find out, let me understand better. So there's a process. There's a process that is given by the Supreme. It's perfect. You know, Om Purnam, Ada Purnamidam. It's all complete and perfect. That was the invocation of the Shishupanishad. That everything that he gives and manifests, he's perfect and complete. And everything that he gives or manifest is perfect and complete. So our system is perfect and complete. So we can understand like that. Jai Baladev Prabhu.
So like you said that in the ideal world that Prabhupada imagined, there would be farmers and we would go back to the Vedic civilization, but isn't like everything is coming from Krishna anyway? So like the nuclear energy that we have can be used both for good and bad purposes. So even the present world is better than the one we had previously, because it has much more ways to make life more comfortable, physical life more comfortable, and it can be used either ways. So like, what is the need to go back to being a farmer and not have electricity? Is that going to like solve the problem? Like the mindset has to change, but not necessarily the physical conditions. If we are imagining the 10,000 golden years in that, like, will the physical structure also change, or will only the mindset change?
Well, the thing is that is the idea that we have, and we basically being indoctrinated to think that this is progress, that we really have progress, because we're able to move, you know. Now we're not in the village, but now we can travel to very fast, you know, to another place, to another continent, and everything has expanded. Now we have electricity, computers, communication is exploded. But the question is, Prabhupada makes, he questions. So what is the result of this great technological advancement? Is people happier? So it's not the idea, okay, so the solution is that we go back to the dark ages. And the dark ages that we relate is, you know, the peasants with the black plague, with the black death, the bubonic plague, oh, why do we have to go back and no, what is being proposed here is that we go back to a Vrindavan during Krishna's time, in which the peasants, they would dress with gold and pearls and jewels. So it's not necessarily that we're claiming let's go back to the Black Age, to the Dark Ages. It's not the proposal. The proposal is to actually have a society that is governed by the principles of high thinking, simple living. Simple living means that you have you live in a life of the mood of goodness. In the mood of goodness, you'll be happier, you'll be prosperous, and you have everything you need. The unnecessary things, they simply add complications. With electricity, yes, it gives us great comfort and facility. So in a hot day, we can actually have a cool room, or in a, you know, like things like that. But what is the price of electricity that we have to pay? Well, we're destroying resources in the world. We're destroying, you know, we have to fuel that with gas or with oil, electricity. And how about vehicles? Now we can transport ourselves so fast, but then, you know, you have to take the oil out of the earth. And that oil economy has created wars among peoples and things like that. So what about, you know, the creations of machines, and, you know, now people have moved out of the land into the cities, working in factories, working, you know, things like that, making machines and things like that. So now people have difficulties with food. So all kinds of things. That's why Prabhupada called this Ugra Karma, means activities that are meant for destroying the environment. So that is what have to change. That's what have to be changed. So a society that is God-centered, that is following the principles of high living, a high thinking, simple living, and that it will be a much better natural way of going. And, you know, people are looking for that alternative. So it will be much better. Ankit.
Yeah. Prabhuji, I actually, you know how yesterday we discussed how I should, you know, try to read more and try to gain more transcendental knowledge. But it's funny, you know how I said yesterday I should just open up a page and read one
right.
One passage. And it's funny how I opened up to this one and it says, it's page 206 in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is. And Sri Krishna Bhagavan says, one who sees inaction in action and action in inaction is intelligent among men, and he is in the transcendental position, although engaged in all sorts of activities. So although, you know, like I have this dharma to be a good son, to be a good, you know, partner, to be a good friend, to be a good employee, I also, you know that it's all in Bhagavan's work, and I should continue doing what I'm doing in life, but still, you know, have him in my hearts of heart. Because my dad, he grew up in a farming family. He was one of seven kids. His father was a very simple man, and my dad came to America all on his own, and he supported his whole family, and he still does to this day, even back in India, and here in the States too, even though some family members can be greedy, you know, with money, but it doesn't matter. He still continues to be the loyal husband, the loyal father to me and my sister, the loyal son, even though my grandparents have passed away long since. And You know, it took me a very long time to forgive him, mm-hmm. but I did, you know, and I feel like every day I'm becoming a stronger man. So, and I want to thank you for that.
Yeah, that's good. Yes, nice. Yeah, it's a wonderful part of the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna is explaining the principle of akarma, karma, and vikarma in that part. So when we understand the person who is in the progressive, who is in this Ishavasya principle and this Ishavasya system of Krishna, he understands that although he's acting, he's not acting. Because with karma, then you're bound to the results of karma, good or bad. Actually, no, it is explained with karma, you're bound. The result of karma is you elevate yourself to a higher, you get some rewards, a better facility for the material world. The results of bikarma, actions that are against the principles of religion, then is you suffer sinful reactions. But akarma is when you offer the results to the for the pleasure of God, Vishnu. And then there's no karma, there's no reaction. So one have to act like that. That's a recommended. That's a system that Krishna has given us. The system of Jagya. Everything you do is for his satisfaction. So Krishna gave us that formula for happiness and peace. And it is comprised of three things that we have to know. Bhaktaran Jagyatapasha, that Krishna is the enjoyer of all sacrifices and austerities. It's for his pleasure, not for ours or anyone else. That Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, that he is the proprietor of everything in this creation. And Sruhidan Sarvabhutanam, he is our best friend. He is our most dear well-wisher. So when we know that, Shanti, Richati, we can obtain this happiness and this peace. So it's very good. Okay, Jai Baladev, keep it concise because it's past 8:30.
No, I was handling the microphone.
I'll try my best. All right. Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you for your class. How do I edit? I'm not a very good speaker, so it's hard to organize my thoughts, especially when I'm rushed. But thank you for your class. You made a lot of points. You pretty much answered my questions, but maybe you could expand a little bit on the points that I appreciate regarding your class. I can't mention them all, but basically you were describing essentially the difference between material wealth and spiritual wealth. Like the ideal, in your class, you were saying this opulence in this verse is an indication of a thriving Vedic civilization. But then you also say another indication of a thriving Vedic civilization is what Prabhu says, Samsidhir Hari Soshana, connecting to the Lord, or Brahmanas. The Brahmanas are meant to give us spiritual wealth, so we won't ruin our material wealth. So one of my favorite quotes regarding spiritual wealth, it says, you would never invite a thief into your house, so why would you allow thoughts that steal your joy to make themselves at home in your mind? And so there's many thieves in the scriptures. Hiranyakashipu had wealth, material wealth, but he had a thief that stole his spiritual wealth. That thief was known as envy, vengeance, and greed. And so we see in the material world, the politicians, they may have wealth on the outside, but then they're put in jail shortly after. So where's your wealth? Can your wealth help you? We see that. So one last point I wanted to mention is that we kind of be humble, or we're forced to be humble. The Lord forced Hiranyakashipu to be humble. The Lord essentially went up to Hiranyakashipu and says, my dear Hiranyakashipu, What is the title of your occupation? So Hirani Kashipu said, the title of my occupation is King of the Universe. And so the Lord said, I have a better title for you, Deceased. And so we see that politicians, they say, my title is CEO, my title is this, my title is that. But then you go from a big CEO to being somebody's girlfriend in jail. So what is the use of your wealth? So maybe you could expand on the fact that my question is essentially that a lot of times when people see Srila Prabhupada, oh yes, I have faith in Krishna. This wealth is an indication of your Krishna consciousness. But if wealth is an indication of Krishna consciousness, that means these big CEOs are more Krishna conscious than Srila Prabhupada. So how have they developed this faith that this is not an indication of your Krishna consciousness? How to develop that faith? Because it's hard, you know, we only develop faith in things that arouse our senses, things that give us external results. So how to maintain that faith?
Yeah, I think it's just that principle of cultivating of transcendental knowledge, hearing from realized souls. So in our case, that was one of the big messages that Sureshwar Prabhu gave in his presentations of Srila Prabhupada as the founder Acharya, that for us, Srila Prabhupada is our guide, you know, to at our entrance to this, you know, what is exactly what we're supposed to do, how we can do it. So the big point, one of the big points that he makes is that we have to listen from Srila Prabhupada. We have to study his teachings to be able to follow his instructions. So, you know, we're following the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, but in one sense, you know, many things we're still a little shallow on our understanding. A lot of things we sort of make it up with our own understandings and processes. But one thing that he mentioned is that we have to, the in so many of the issues that we confront to understand how to properly do things, throughout Prabhupada's books and instructions, they're spread, you know, I mean, you find everything there. So we have to endeavor into listening and cultivate the studies of Srila Prabhupada's, you know, teachings and books. And then we can understand. Because the principle of tena tyaktena bunchita, that principle, if we're able to be satisfied with our quota, you know, according to this particular body that brings, you know, a particular wire and brings a particular karma and propensity, then wealth for me will be devastating. So therefore, I'm not wealthy, you know, because this body is wired that it goes like, you know, if I have wealth, there's no question to be Krishna consciousness. But that's not for everybody. There's some devotees that have wealth, that have a, you know, there is a wonderful devotee that is so wealthy. I mean, his name is Shamika Rishi in New Jersey. You know, the man is, I don't know where his wealth comes, you know. I mean, he was a doctor, but he's always wealthy. And he just spend and spend in devotees and things and process. Right now, he's building a temple with his own money in his hometown in India. So, wealthy. But it doesn't affect his Krishna consciousness, you know. So, I remember also, I just elaborate a little more, that when I was younger in my Krishna consciousness, I was aspiring to be a successful musician, and I was following my career, and my partners were also very amazing musicians, you know, and so we endeavored together on this, and everything looks like it was really going to happen. We had it, you know. I mean, they were very attractive people. The front person was this Mataji, who was very beautiful. You know, we're young, talented. Everything was there, but it didn't happen. Krishna didn't allow. You know, so I quit because my Guru Maharaj sort of like, my friends, they continue. They still continue. They're in the 60s and they're still trying. You know? And they make wonderful music. I mean, really, really slick. But never happened. They never were able to obtain their goal. And why Krishna does that? I mean, we were better than many things that were there at that time. It was not meant for us. I understood that for me. It was not meant for me because if I had that, there's no question I will be able to have the same opportunity that I have now to be, you know, to have a chance to become a devotee. You know, it will affect me very, very. So I understood that. I have faith on that principle. So, you know, we accept our quota with gratitude and with great, you know, yeah, with gratitude. That it's just right for me. And if I have faith in that principle, then I can be satisfied. You know, I don't aspire to be this or that. I'll be satisfied with my quota. So, you know, someone may be very poor and be very satisfied. You know, Sudama Brahmana, he was satisfied. His wife was concerned about her, but him, but, you know, he was satisfied. So I should end here. Thank you so much. Garantara Shriman Bhagavatam Ki Jai.